St. Helena, California, July 8, 1906. The writing and sending out of the testimonies to the church. Dear brother, there are some who think they are able to measure the character and to estimate the importance of the work the Lord has given me to do. Their own mind and judgment is the standard by which they would weigh the testimonies. My instructor said to me, "Tell these men that God has not committed to them the work of measuring, classifying, and defining the character of the testimonies. Those who attempt this are sure to err in their conclusions. The Lord would have men adhere to their appointed work. If they will keep the way of the Lord, they will be able to discern clearly that the work which He has appointed me to do is not a work of human devising. Those who carefully read the testimonies, as they have appeared from the early days, need not be perplexed as to their origin. The many books, written by the help of the Spirit of God, bear a living witness to the character of the testimonies. In the early days of our experience in the message, the Spirit of God often came upon a few of us as we were assembled, and I was taken away in vision. The Lord gave such light and evidence, such comfort and hope and joy, that His praises were upon our lips. While my husband lived, he acted as a helper and counselor in the sending out of the messages that were given to me. We traveled extensively. Sometimes, light would be given to me in the night season, sometimes in the daytime before large congregations. The instruction I received in vision was faithfully written out by me, as I had time and strength for the work. Afterward, we examined the matter together, my husband correcting grammatical errors and eliminating needless repetition. Then, it was carefully copied for the persons addressed or for the printer. As the work grew, others assisted me in the preparation of matter for publication. After my husband's death, faithful helpers joined me, who labored untiringly in the work of copying the testimonies and preparing articles for publication. But the reports that are circulated that any of my helpers are permitted to add matter or change the meaning of the messages I write out are not true. While we were in Australia, the Lord instructed me that W.C. White should be relieved from the many burdens his brethren would lay upon him, and that he might be more free to assist me in the work the Lord has laid upon me. The promise had been given, "I will put my spirit upon him and give him wisdom." Since my return to America, I have several times received instruction that the Lord has given me W.C. White to be my helper, and that in this work the Lord will give him of his spirit. It requires much wisdom and sound judgment, quickened by the Spirit of God, to know the proper time and manner to present the instruction that has been given. When the minds of persons reproved are under a strong deception, they naturally resist the testimony, and having taken an attitude of resistance, it is difficult for them afterward to acknowledge that they have been wrong. In the early days of this cause, if some of the leading brethren were present when messages from the Lord were given, we would consult with them as to the best manner of bringing the instruction before the people. Sometimes it was decided that certain portions would better not be read before a congregation. Sometimes, those whose course was reproved would request that the matters pointing out their wrongs and dangers should be read before others, that they, too, might be benefited. Often, after testimonies of reproof were read, hearty confessions were made. Then we would unite in a season of prayer, and the Lord would manifest His pardoning grace to those who had confessed their sins. The acceptance of the testimonies brought the rich blessing of God into our assemblies. Faithfully, I endeavor to write out that which is given me from time to time by the Divine Counselor. Some portions of that which I write are sent out immediately to meet the present necessities of the work. Other portions are held until the development of circumstances makes it evident to me that the time has come for their use. Sometimes, in ministers and physicians bearing responsibilities, there has developed a disposition to discard the testimonies, and I have been instructed not to place testimonies in their hands. For having yielded to the Spirit that tempted and overcame Adam and Eve, they have opened mind and heart to the control of the enemy. Being on a false track and laboring under deceptive imaginings, they will read in the testimonies things that are not there, but which are in agreement with the false statements that they have listened to. By reading the testimonies in the light of their own kindling, they are deceived and will deceive others. Sometimes, after very clear-cut, decided reproofs have been written out, they are held for a time until, by personal correspondence, I have endeavored to change the spirit of those to whom they are addressed. If these efforts are unsuccessful, the messages, with all their strength of rebuke or reproof, are sent to them, whether they will hear or whether they will deny the truthfulness of the message. If those whose errors are pointed out make confession of their wrongdoing, the spell of the enemy may be broken. If they will repent and forsake their sins, God is faithful and just to forgive their sins and to cleanse them from all unrighteousness. Christ, the sin-pardoning Redeemer, will remove the filthy garments from them, give them a change of raiment, and set a fair mitre upon their head. But so long as they refuse to turn from iniquity, they cannot develop a character that will stand in the great day of judgment. Often concealed wrongs in the life of individuals are opened before me, and I am bidden to bear a message of reproof and warning. I have been told that many who give heed to the false science of the enemy would denounce my work as that of a false prophet, and would place upon the testimony such interpretations as tend to change the truth of God into a lie. Satan is on the alert, and some, who in the past have been used by the Lord in doing His work, but who have permitted themselves to be deceived, will be stirred up to make an improper use of the messages given. Because they do not wish to listen to the words of reproof, because they will not hear counsel, and improve their course of action, and do their appointed work, they will misconstrue the messages to the church and confuse many minds. Nevertheless, I am to bear the message that is given me to bear, so long as the Lord shall choose. He has not given me the work of settling all the misunderstandings that are cherished in hearts of unbelief. Just as long as a door is open to receive the tempter's suggestions, difficulties will multiply. The hearts of those who will not come to the light are open to unbelief. If my time and strength are consumed upon such matters, this serves Satan's purposes. The Lord has said to me, "Bear the testimonies. Your work is not to settle difficulties. Your work is to reprove and to present the righteousness of Christ." An incident. At one time in the early days of the message, Father Butler and Elder Hart became confused in regard to the testimonies. In great distress they groaned and wept, but for some time they would not give the reasons for their perplexity. However, being pressed to give a reason for their faithless speech and manner, Elder Hart referred to a small pamphlet that had been published as The Visions of Sister White, and said that to his certain knowledge, some visions were not included. Before a large audience, these brethren both talked strongly about their losing confidence in the work. My husband handed the little pamphlet to Elder Hart and requested him to read what was printed on the title page. "A sketch of the experience and visions of Mrs. E. G. White," he read. For a moment there was silence, and then my husband explained that we had been very short of means and were able to print at first only a small pamphlet, and he promised the brethren that when sufficient means was raised, the visions would be published more fully in book form. Elder Butler was deeply moved, and after the explanation had been made, he said, "Let us bow before God." Prayers, weeping, and confessions followed, such as we have seldom heard. Father Butler said, "Brother White, forgive me. I was afraid you were concealing from us some of the light we ought to have. Forgive me, Sister White." Then the power of God came into the meeting in a wonderful manner. Experience at Berrien Springs. Written July 8, 1906. The testimonies are to be given before those who will make the right use of them. Wisdom is needed to know how to present the light that is given, and to discern what should be imparted immediately and what should be withheld. Some things are given to guide us in moves soon to be made, that we may carry out the purposes of the Lord. Other things must wait till circumstances arise that will make the instruction more impressive. There are times when, as a meeting progresses, the way is opened for the presentation of the matters which have been withheld because the minds of some were not at first prepared to receive them. At Berrien Springs in 1904, I had many things of a decided character to bring before the people during the meeting. But light came to me, during the meeting, that the minds of some present had been beclouded by satanic agencies, and that to attempt to present to them, at that time, the light God had given me would bring on a tremendous struggle that would nearly cost me my life. Some had begun the work of specifying what portions of the testimonies were of God and what portions were not of God, as if God had made them competent to judge. That which reproved their course of action they specified was not the true message. At the meetings appointed for confession, the Spirit of God was present, and holy angels were in the assembly, but men had their own ideas and determinations to work out. With such a spirit as was manifested at Berrien Springs, it was not an appropriate time to present all of the message that had been given me for the people. It seems strange to me that men who have diligently studied the Bible cannot discern the fulfillment of the inspired words of Paul, that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. 1 Timothy 4, verse 1. What has blinded their eyes that they cannot discern? Has not their experience been of value in recognizing the afterworkings of those who have departed from the faith?